Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio, your spot in the corner office, the radio show where executives share their secrets to success. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Jim Wilson, Newmark, Kate Duffy, Wisfis Bank, Chuck Zwicker, Weidenhammer, Julia Langan, Consumer 51, and Marty Wollner from Executive Leaders Radio. And Mr. Zwicker, can you give us a rundown of who we have on the show today, please?
Sure, Herb. We got a great lineup today. We're going to start by talking with Bob Clemens, who's a partner with FRS Advisors. We'll be speaking with Tara Sipe, who is a VP of Commercial Lending with Meridian Bank, Richard Green, who is the Executive Chairman and Owner of First Trust Bank, and then wrapping up with Jonathan Friedan, who is a Senior Principal at Ballinger.
Gotcha. Let's get to our first guest, Bob Clemens, partner at FRS Advisors. Bob, what is FRS Advisors? What are you guys doing?
We're a boutique wealth management and financial planning firm working with business owners and executives.
Gotcha. Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters, and where are you in the pecking order?
I grew up in a row home in Philadelphia, a very blue-collar neighborhood, and I'm an only child.
Uh-huh. What was the upside or downside of an only child, and what's that have to do with who you are nowadays?
I think the upside was that you learn to be a little creative and independent. The downside was, times of loneliness. Trying to find a way to fit in, make friends, having to work harder to make friends.
Gotcha. 8 to 14. What were the major things you were doing 8 to 14 years old?
Baseball, sports, riding bikes with friends. I did an overnight camp in New Hampshire and hanging around in the neighborhood.
And you mentioned your parents got divorced when you were 4, and your mom would tell other adults that, that you didn't need to be the man in the house, that you needed to be a kid. But it sounds to me like the reason she would tell everybody that you needed to be the kid, not the man in the house, is because you really were taking responsibility.
I took responsibility around the house. And I think intrinsically I looked out for my mom and cared about her wellness or well-being. There was no need.
Isn't it possible the fact that you were looking out for your mom, isn't that exactly what you do for your clients nowadays?
It is. I look out to make sure that they've done the right planning to protect their families in emergencies or in loss.
Gotcha. Chuck, you want to give me a hand, please?
Yeah, Bob, let's go back to your early years. I noticed you were graduate of LaSalle College High School. That's a well-known school in Philadelphia. It's a Catholic boys' school, prep school. What did that teach you about yourself? What did the Christian Brothers teach you about yourself?
The Christian Brothers taught me a lot of accountability, responsibility, independence as well, kindness and generosity.
Mm-hmm. And Jim, you want to give me a hand, please?
Yeah, Bob, after your parents' divorce, your mom sent you to camp in New Hampshire to give you exposure to a bigger world. When did it hit you that what she was doing wasn't easy, that it was a real sacrifice?
It probably didn't hit me until a lot later in life, when she had lost her job when I was in high school. And I think that's when it really hit me that she's stretching herself financially, emotionally, and even physically to get me to LaSalle every day, to give me a life that she didn't have and that she wanted me to have.
Okay. And being at that camp away from everything familiar opened your eyes to something bigger. What did that experience show you about the world or about what was possible for you?
It showed me that there was a whole other class of people in the world that I'd never seen before, other parts of the country that I didn't know existed, and that I sailed up there. I didn't even know what sailing was before I went to that camp. Mm-hmm. So I just learned that the world was much bigger than the neighborhood I grew up in.
Yeah. Kate?
Yeah. So, Bob, you talked about working harder, and you're also a product of a divorced family, which can be financially difficult. What role has financial success played in your sense of identity?
So my personal financial success, I don't take a lot. I don't identify as that. It's more, I feel I work harder and try to make money because I feel I have an obligation to give back, whether it's to my clients, giving back with my time to make myself available, or through philanthropic endeavors. I just really believe that my role in this world is to make it a better place than what I found it.
Julia?
Bob, you mentioned that your mom taught you a lot of empathy and her sacrifices, showed you that there was a bigger world. How come you stayed in Philly?
I think without even realizing it that I never wanted to leave. I felt responsible to be close to my mom and never wanted to leave her, being an only child of a divorced family. She did remarry later on, but I don't think I ever wanted her to feel alone or be alone because of how much she sacrificed her life to give me the life that I had.
Mm-hmm. Marty?
Bob, you help families manage their money now, and you mentioned earlier that you helped your mom manage her money at a very young age. How does that impact you, that experience impact how you help your families now?
I think it helps me understand that everybody's going through a different thing financially, you know, whether it's a struggle or a goal or an objective. Everybody's dealing with something, and it allows me to empathize with that, relate to it, and hopefully have a plan to help alleviate some of the stress that they may be feeling.
Mm-hmm. Chuck?
Bob, I want to go back to something you said in the green room that I think is important. You said something about living with imposter syndrome and how it caused you to work harder as a kid. Unpack that for me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was a tiny kid. I didn't start high school. I started high school when I was 13 years old. So I was very small. And my whole life, I was smaller, never the most intelligent, kind of goofy looking. I never felt I fit in. So I was constantly working harder to try to establish myself and stand out and be the better version of myself. And I still suffer with the imposter syndrome. I've exceeded every level of success I ever expected for myself. And I still have that drive. But, you know, I don't know that that'll ever leave me, but it keeps me focused and keeps me working hard and pushing.
So you volunteer time now with an organization called Turning Points for Children. Is there a connection there with kind of how you saw yourself when you were younger?
For sure. I mean, there's a lot of kids in Turning Points that really come from nothing, don't have families, maybe were displaced. My situation was not that extreme, but I feel, again, I have that obligation to try to help these kids and these families achieve a better life and some level of normalcy.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you have three boys. What have you learned from your kids that had anything to do with growing this business?
It's the hard work that you need to put in to be a parent, how much time it takes, and also how to slow down. You know, I think with my business growing, it was push, push, push. I was constantly in growth mode. Having kids forced me to take a step back and say, you actually have to put some time and thoughtfulness into being a parent. So I also need to do the same thing with my business and my clients, is just slow down a little and spend a little more time and thoughtfulness on the actual business itself and not just the growth of the business.
Do you think your mom's proud of you?
Oh my gosh. She tells me every day. I get a text every day about how proud she is of me.
Why? Why?
I don't want to cry on this podcast, but yes.
Why?
Because I think she never expected the kid that I was to be the man that I am. Maybe she didn't realize what potential. I think she knew the potential was there. I just think, again, I've exceeded anything that she or I expected for ourselves. And she would have been proud of me if I was, you know, regardless, but I know for a fact she's proud of the man I am, the father, the business owner, you know, my role in the community.
The friends you had when you were a kid, would they be surprised at your success nowadays?
I think everybody from that area would be surprised that I'm successful, for sure.
Yeah, come on.
My teachers especially.
How many kids were in the neighborhood, and what was your role with the kids in the neighborhood?
I mean, there were hundreds. We grew up on a block of probably 20 kids in my row home block alone. And again, because of being an only child and feeling like an imposter, I had to be the organizer, or I made myself the organizer and the leader, because I'm sure there was some kind of fear that if I didn't do it, I wouldn't be included.
Mm-hmm. So your nature is to constantly pull your brothers and sisters and other extended family around you because you were an only child. Am I reading that right?
I had some friends growing up that were like siblings to me who were also only children. So that was, it was very nice to have that. But I do keep a very tight unit, very tight circle with friends and family right now.
Mm-hmm. You have clients that are close friends too?
I've become very close friends with a lot of my clients. All my friends are clients, but the clients I picked up organically have also become very good friends of mine.
So you're all about relationships, it sounds like to me.
That's all I have going for me is I feel is the ability to build relationships and sustain relationships. I'm not going to beat anybody out in an, you know, in an intelligence contest. I thrive on relationships and, mm-hmm. and transparency and authenticity.
Mm-hmm. What's the website address for this organization known as FRS Advisors?
It's FRSAdvisors.com.
We've been speaking with Bob Clemens, partner at FRS Advisors here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, it's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, stick around. We'll be back in a moment right after this quick break. Don't go anywhere. And your name and company is?
Matt Liebman, Amplius Wealth Advisors.
And what makes Amplius special?
At Amplius, we treat complacency like the enemy. It's an ever-changing world, particularly with technology. AI is the most relevant force in our industry, and we are always looking to get better as an organization.
It sounds to me like nothing's ever good enough. It sounds like you really want to serve your clients using the best technology and the best service. Am I reading that right?
That's absolutely right. If we're not better tomorrow than we were yesterday, we're doing something wrong. Always have to get better.
Uh-huh. And what do you really enjoy about your job at Amplius?
Wealth management as a field, and my job in particular, I find it to be the least boring job in the world. Dealing with all kinds of people, families, every one of them is different, and every day is different.
What's the website address for Amplius Wealth Management?
AmpliusWealth.com.
How do you spell that?
A-M-P-L-I-U-S.
This has been your Business Spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, and let's get to know Tara Seipp, who's VP of Commercial Lending at Meridian Bank. Tara, what's Meridian Bank? What are you guys doing?
Meridian Bank is a community bank here locally, and we are a $2.5 billion
bank. Gotcha. Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters, and where are you in the pecking order?
I grew up in Lansdale, and I am the oldest of two with a younger brother.
Uh-huh. And what were you doing 8 to 14 years old? What were you up to?
I was doing competitive dance and cheer, and I had my first job at 14 teaching dance.
Uh-huh. And what was your favorite subject in school?
Math.
Uh-huh. And let's see here. Well, Julia, why don't you give me a hand getting to know Tara, please?
Sure. So cheerleading and dance, Tara, they're very competitive. How does that shape who you are today?
Yeah, so I think that it helps being competitive in the way that you get a lot of feedback. You have to have thick skin in that kind of a world. And, you know, that goes with being in sales as well. You have to be able to have thick skin. And when you hear the word no, it's no for now, but not no forever. And you just got to keep working at it.
Mm-hmm. Kate?
Yeah, so Tara, you definitely have to have thick skin in this industry and confidence to get as far as you have. Tell us about the early experiences that helped you develop that confidence, especially in decision making.
Yeah, so, you know, I had a very strange route coming to the commercial lending world. You know, I started out as a teller and worked my way up in the as an administrative assistant and worked with some amazing lenders, and then moved into the roles of being a commercial credit analyst and then loan documentation. So, you know, that kind of just built who I am today. And it was just a vast experience of the entire commercial lending experiences that helps me just continue on and push through.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Zwicker?
Tara, you clearly were an overachiever just and competitive from cheer and dance. Who did you get that from? Like, was that just inherent in you, or was that kind of picked up along the way?
I think it's kind of a little bit of both, honestly. I mean, I definitely feel like, you know, sometimes you can be a natural born leader and in some ways, but in other times you have people who would push you. Like my mom was definitely an influencer of that. You know, I had a strong influencer in dance watching somebody, a professional dancer called Martha Graham. She told stories, and it really made me feel like I could do whatever I wanted to do and push through it.
And you mentioned you were a dance instructor at 14, which is pretty young. So what did that teach you at that point? Were you aware of what that was teaching you in terms of leading others?
At the time, no. I mean, when I look back and reflect on it, absolutely. At the time, I just looked at it as a fun job to be able to do what I loved doing and helping others, especially younger children, and, you know, giving them an opportunity to be expressive like I was. And I think, you know, that really has helped me today. I didn't realize that till much later, obviously, of the leadership styles that I like to be and what I want to be.
Mm-hmm. James?
Yeah, Tara, you said that teaching dance at 14, it was really about storytelling, helping people understand something and bring it to life. Do you see that what you do today the same way, taking something complex and making it clear for your clients?
Absolutely. You know, small businesses all the way up to large businesses all have a story to tell and how they got themselves going. And, you know, it's my job to understand and hear their stories, listen to it, and help them figure out where they need to go and grow next. And, you know, it's all about the story at the end of the day. What do we help them grow to?
And you also said growing up, math was your favorite subject. Is your strength really connecting those two, understanding the story, but grounding it in the numbers so clients feel confident moving forward?
Absolutely. You know, even though, you know, you're listening to the story, you still kind of have to be a little analytical and understand how they all combine together to make their story work.
Mm-hmm. Marty?
You told us about how much of a hard worker you were when you were younger. Give us an example from ages 8 to 14 when maybe you didn't succeed at first at something, but were able to overcome the obstacles and find success.
Yeah. So, you know, I dabbled into a couple other sports, tried things here and there. They, you know, realized they weren't necessarily my cup of tea. I wasn't that great at it, but I at least tried. You know, at the end of the day, it's always about what you try. If you don't try, then how are you going to know whether you're not going to be good at it and succeed in it? And, you know, dance and cheer were always my stronger suits. And that's just kind of where I ended up growing into.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned we were talking in the green room that you had a major pivot in your life. What was that major pivot? What were you talking about?
Yeah. So 6 years ago, I guess it might be 7 years now, my mom had a stroke. She was an amazing person, just constantly working. She actually had a stroke at work where she, thankfully there was a lot of people around her, and she probably would have died if she didn't have the perseverance that she has today. It changed her life completely, where she's not able to speak. She's not able to really walk. And she would paint all the time when we were kids, and she had to relearn how to paint with her left hand. And she does a phenomenal job. And it's just so inspiring to just continue to have that perseverance the way she does.
Mm-hmm. Why was mom's stroke such a pivot in your life, though?
I have two young children, and at that time, I, you know, had to figure out what I was going to do. I had to help my dad as well, who was very reliant on my mom. He had back surgery just 6 months prior, and my mom was doing everything for him. So I had to become a mom, a caretaker for both my parents, and still run my business and still try to continue in working what I do.
Sounds like your middle name's Responsibility. How's that helped you in your business success? And how's that, what's the benefit to your clients of your nickname being Miss Responsibility?
Well, I think it's trust more than anything. I think a lot of people can trust that I'm going to be there for them and have their corner and always be something that they, someone who they can go to and know that I will get the job done no matter how long or how quick it could take. And, you know, one of the biggest things that I always say is you can reach out to me anytime on my cell phone. I'm always available and I will reach, I will listen. I will be there and respond.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Zwicker, didn't you have a question regarding influences or something like that?
Yeah, well, you kind of mentioned it, Tara, with Martha Graham. I'm not sure everybody knows who she is and why she was influential to you.
So she was a famous choreographer who really did take ballet into a modern take. She was the first contemporary choreographer to take classic ballet and change it into the way that we see modern or contemporary dance now. And she told stories in a way that nobody else has been able to tell. So, you know, that's my, the inspiration that I took from that is be authentic, authentic to who you are and listen to the passion that other people have and help them develop that passion further.
Mm-hmm. Tara, what do you do? What do you do to relax? What do you do in your spare time?
Well, some people don't know if it's actually relaxing, but I do find it relaxing to coach cheer. I, like I said, I have two boys, but I coach cheer for girls from the 9 to 12 year old ages. And it's just something that I love giving back to the community for our local organization and just helping them become better people.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean helps them become better people? What are you talking about?
So they are young children growing up in a world that is a little chaotic right now, as I'm sure we all know. And to have somebody positively influence them and give them something to have fun and hold on to, such as cheerleading, and build their confidence like I had when I was younger, to be a leader and be competitive and take feedback and use that when they're older, is something that I really enjoy doing.
Sounds to me like you're also a natural mom. It sounds to me, not just with your sons, but also in terms of these other girls. Am I reading that right, or am I mistaken?
Oh, no, you're right. I actually all call them my girls, since I don't actually have one. So I say, you're all my little girls. Mm-hmm. And they love that.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like you got this responsibility thing going on, not just with your clients, but also with the community in terms of developing other people. And what's the best part of your job?
Best part of my job, honestly, is listening to the stories. I truly think that at the end of the day, that's what my passion is about doing the job that I do. I could sit at a desk all day long. I can go do sales, but it's the customer stories of how they got their businesses up and running that keeps me wanting to come back to do this job.
Mm-hmm. And what makes Meridian Bank special?
Honestly, they are a truly boots on the ground community. They want us out being involved in the community, and they really give back and care about the people in the community, that it's such a heartwarming place to be at.
Mm. What do you mean it's heartwarming to be there? It's a bank. What are you talking about?
I have worked at multiple banks, and this is the first place that I can say I feel like I'm at home when I'm working somewhere. And I can say that it starts from the top down. The top really makes you feel like you're part of something, not just, you know, a worker, but really part of a great organization and community.
What's the website address for Meridian Bank?
MeridianBanker.com.
You can speak with Tara Seif, VP of Commercial Lending at Meridian Bank. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this quick break. Back, you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, and let's get to know Richard Green, Executive Chairman and Owner of First Trust Bank. Richard, what is First Trust Bank? What are you guys doing?
First Trust is a $5.7 billion community bank that I own. Our mission is to cultivate prosperity for our customers, our employees, and our communities.
Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters? And where are you in the pecking order?
I'm from Philadelphia, Drexel Hill, moved to Haverford. Mm-hmm. I'm one of three boys. I'm in the middle.
Gotcha. And 8 to 14, what were the bullets of what you were doing 8 to 14?
Going to school, going to summer camp, playing anything with a ball.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All righty. Mr. Jim Wilson, can you give me a hand, please?
Richard, you started going into the bank with your dad at 5 years old, and you've said that's really how you got to know him. At that age, you're not thinking about business. You just want time with your dad. What did those Saturday mornings mean to you as a kid?
It was just an opportunity to be with him. That's really, I think, all you think about when you're doing that. And somehow it felt like an adventure.
I'm guessing you observed him, and now all these years later, in the way that you lead, the way you treat people, how much of him do you see in yourself?
Well, there's some there. There's some of my grandfather. My grandfather was a salesman and an entrepreneur, and I had the opportunity to work with him for a few years.
Mm-hmm. Chuck?
My dad was independent and analytic.
Chuck, so, want to give me a hand, please?
Yeah, Richard, stay with that for a second. But third generation family business, what was the dynamics in your family as a result of family and business being all one? And what was your mom's role in that?
Well, business was always important in our conversations. But in the banking business, it encompasses a lot of businesses. So we had to know a lot about the world. And that was important. Mm-hmm. My mother's role in that, my mother was not involved in the business, but she had tremendous grace and competitive fire, mm-hmm. being one of the top amateur golfers in the mm-hmm. in the area.
Kate?
So given the complex dynamics of a family business, tell us, what did success look like in your household growing up?
Academic and athletic success.
Gotcha. Julia?
Richard, you mentioned that your mom was very competitive being a golfer, but also was quite kind. How do you bring that to your company today?
Well, we are very competitive. We're one of one of the strongest and most profitable banks in the country. The kindness is we give back to our communities through First Trust and our Green Family Foundation.
Marty?
Richard, you mentioned when you were younger that you were a bigger kid and you had a friend that recruited you and got you to play football. How did football change your life?
Well, one, the challenges of itself to switch a sport and play football was important, but I learned a lot from football, competitiveness, teamwork, and resilience. And it turned out I have a knack for turning my avocations into vocations. So over time, I love football, and I ended up owning being a partner in the Philadelphia Eagles now. Mm-hmm. And I've done that with other things, turning my avocations into vocations.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Zwicker?
I want to go back a second. Richard, do you ever think about how your leadership style is different from your father and your grandfather and what that's done to evolve the business?
I do. My father was extremely analytic, but almost to a fault, and he would be very slow to make decisions, very thoughtful, very good. My grandfather was a salesman, and an entrepreneurial. So between the two of them, I think I may have gotten the best of both.
Well, what are you? And were all three of you the right men for the business at that time?
I think so, and I think that's right. I think businesses need different leadership at different times. And for me, having the benefit of them, I think I got some of the entrepreneurial part from my grandfather, and I got the analytic and the independent thinking from my father.
Mr. Wilson?
Richard, you said when the company converted from mutual to stock in 1987, it really became Generation One Plus. Did that make you feel like you had to build something, not inherit it?
I always felt I wanted to build it. I never would have come to work in my family business unless I was going to excel. But I had to reimagine the business in order for it to grow and prosper.
Because from the outside, people hear third generation, but your story, you told us you had paper routes, you're cleaning pools, that says otherwise. Was it always important to you to earn your place, not just carry the name?
I wouldn't say it was always important, but when I made a decision to come to work for my father as the general counsel here, I made up my mind that I was going to excel. If I was going to stay in the business.
And when you step back from a five-year-old wanting time with his dad to Generation One Plus to part owner of the Eagles, what does that journey mean to you?
Well, when we won the Super Bowl the first time, the parade from Broad Street, I had my son with me, and we were on the float going up Broad Street, and I pointed to South Philadelphia, Point Breeze Avenue, where we started in my great-grandmother's kitchen, and I said, "I wonder what your great-grandfather would think of that riding where we came from."
So, what would he say? What would he think?
I'm not sure he would even understand it, but I think he would be amazed.
Mm-hmm. Amazed because of what you've been able to do in terms of growth, serving the community. Tell me more about what he would be amazed about, Richard.
I think, in all those metrics, our growth and our ability to serve the community and kind of our place in the community, frankly, as a well-established financial institution.
You mentioned your place in the community. So tell me a little bit more about that. It sounds to me like this community thing's really implicit in who you are. What are you talking about?
Well, I think we believe in giving back to whom much is given, much is expected. We believe that. We give back in many ways, as I mentioned, through the Green Family Foundation that I established in honor of my parents, and in especially to the Philadelphia region, because it's been the source of our prosperity. We want to continue that.
It doesn't sound like you're the kind of guy to rest on your laurels. I mean, you know, you got involved with the family business. You shifted from mutual to stock. You wanted to take it the next step. You are taking it the next step. And also sounds like you're taking it the next step in terms of really engaging in the community. Do you ever sleep?
I sleep a lot. And actually, I usually sleep easily. There's a lot to do. And I, as I said, I have other interests besides the bank.
Uh-huh. And it sounds to me like your real specialty is really understanding and getting engaged with and trusting people, developing relationships with other entrepreneurs, just to see where these relationships take you. Business is fun for you, isn't it?
Well, the beauty of the banking business is what you get a view into a great number of businesses, and we serve family businesses, entrepreneurs, real estate developers, professionals, and I truly enjoy being able to see the X-rays and understand and help those people who realize their dreams.
How important is your intuition in terms of your business?
Well, you don't need a college degree or an advanced degree to be a lender. All you need is money. So how do you differentiate that? And the answer is, I like to think that I'm a reasonable judge of character, and that while I'm in the numbers business, it's really about people.
Got you. What's the website address for First Trust Bank, please?
FirstTrustBank.com.
We've been speaking with Richard Green, who is the executive chairman and owner of First Trust Bank here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this quick break.
This is Herb Cohen, your host of Executive Leaders Radio. And if you're a business consultant, if you consult to business owners or to business owners' team members, then we'd like to speak with you, because we're getting requests from people all over the country, from entrepreneurs all over the country that are starting and building their businesses, where they're looking for help. And maybe we can help connect you. Why don't you email us at consult@executiveleadersradio.com. That's consult@executiveleadersradio.com. And perhaps we can connect you to folks, to entrepreneurs and their team members all around the country that are looking for help. That's consult@executiveleadersradio.com.
Back, you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, and let's get to know Jonathan Friedan, Senior Principal at Ballinger. Jonathan, what is Ballinger? What are you guys doing?
Ballinger is a 270-person architectural and engineering firm in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. We design and engineer outstanding buildings and infrastructure for academic science and healthcare. Our portfolio includes major projects for CHOP, Yale, Duke, MIT, University cool. of Michigan, University
where
of Michigan.
Where are you from? How many brothers and sisters, and where are you in the pecking order?
I'm middle child of mm-hmm. three.
And where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Grandview, New York, and on the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
Gotcha. And 8 to 14, what were the major things you were doing 8 to 14 years old?
I was going to school. I was playing touch football in a tough neighborhood, tackle football in a tough neighborhood on a concrete school yard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All righty, Jim, you want to give me a hand with Jonathan, please?
Sure. Jonathan, in the green room, you told us about being a kid riding your bike at 6 a.m. to the Tappan Zee Bridge, exploring, going into sewers. What do you think was driving that at the time? What were you curious about or trying to understand?
I think we were just trying to have adventures, and we were amazed that we could actually crawl in that sewer pipe and stick our heads out alongside the street and wave at the cars as they went by.
How do you think that curiosity shows up today? You're someone who likes to build things and figure things out. Is that curiosity show up when you're designing complex systems and buildings?
Sure, and I'm not afraid of surprises. You know, I'm excited about surprises.
Julia?
Jonathan, you mentioned in the green room that your sixth grade teacher threw chalk at you. Tell us how you learned from that and how it plays into how you lead today.
Yeah, I think it woke me up. John Kennedy had just been assassinated, and we were all shocked sitting in the classroom. And a couple of us started nervously laughing, and that's when he threw the chalk. And I think I really realized about how things can get misinterpreted, and that you have to be careful. You know, what comes out of your mouth is important.
So what's that have to do with what you're doing nowadays in your business career?
I think, when you are speaking to people, especially the people you don't know, things like sarcasm and things can get misinterpreted. And again, what you say is really important, and you have to be careful about it.
Kate?
So, Jonathan, tell us, what is your earliest emotional money memory? And do you think that you might have misinterpreted that?
It was my parents fighting over money. And no, I don't think I misinterpreted it.
Chuck?
Jonathan, stay with that. Tell me a little bit about your mom and your dad. What do you bring to work from them?
Well, I think from my mother, I bring realization that a person can change the world. One person can change the world significantly, and that you don't have to take givens as given. They can be challenged. And I think from my father, I took a sense of humor and a skepticism about sales pitches, but an appreciation of the energy that a person who was making a sales pitch was putting into it.
One person can change the world. Did that resonate with you at a young age?
Sure. My mother was really the igniter of the second wave of feminism. She started the women's movement in America in the early 1960s. And I saw that right in front of my eyes. So that did make a big impression.
Wow. What kind of impression did that make? Tell us more about that. What are you talking about?
Well, she basically, from what she wrote and what she thinks, she was able to change the course of our society to a great degree.
Mr. Marty?
Jonathan, you mentioned growing up in Manhattan and playing on the city streets of New York. What did you take away from that experience, and how does that impact who you are today?
It was actually in Piermont, New York, that I was playing on the streets, and that was a tough factory town at the time. And I think there's a resilience and toughness and an appreciation of people that come from all different backgrounds that I got from doing that.
Jim?
Marty, were you the middle child, you said?
Yes.
Well, what role did you naturally fall into in your family? Were you the one navigating between people, finding common ground?
Yeah, I think that's very perceptive, Jim. I was the one that had to kind of hold things together when everybody was going in different directions.
And that idea of balancing different personalities and perspectives, how does that show up in your work today when you're sitting between scientists, doctors, administrators, and trying to bring one vision together?
It's an appreciation for and an empathy for, people coming from all kinds of different places in terms of their educational background, in terms of their motivations, what's driving them. And it's important to understand it, to feel it, and to move it in a positive direction.
Mr. Zwicker? Good, Jim.
Oh, I was also thinking about that. Your mom talking about how one person could change the world is. Do you think your work today, especially in healthcare and education, is your way of doing that?
Yeah, we have been at the leading edge of reducing energy and carbon emissions in buildings. And that accounts for 30% of the world's energy and carbon. And we have reduced those that energy and carbon by on the order of 40 to 50% over the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Zwicker?
Curious, Jonathan, did you always see yourself as a builder? I mean, you're an engineer by trade. Was that something you saw at a young age, or did that come about later?
No. I was brought up to be a lawyer and be the president of the United States. But when my parents got in a messy divorce, and no offense to the lawyers, but the lawyers took all the money, I decided that I wanted to do something kind of more down to earth and productive, and became an engineer.
So you, when you saw the difficulty your parents were going through with money and the attorneys, you decided that you wanted to get involved with doing something to help change society. Your way of doing that was through the world of engineering, because your mom had encouraged you to get, and she gave you the confidence that you could change the world. Am I seeing that correctly?
Yeah, she had no idea engineering would be the way I'd go about it, but she was always very supportive.
And it just so happens that the engineering you're doing has to do a lot with the social service organizations in this country, the schools, the hospitals, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we really do gravitate toward both institutions and corporations with a mission, and a mission to really improve the human condition.
Mm-hmm. And what's your specialty in the world of engineering?
I'm a mechanical engineer, so energy and carbon is at the core of what I do.
Mm-hmm. And that's your vehicle, that's your tool to make the change in the world?
Yes. I think we've had a significant impact over the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm. A significant impact, and it's measurable, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's the best? Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the wonderful thing, you know, about buildings and infrastructure is you see it, you touch it, you feel it. And, you know, it is a great equalizer amongst people from all kinds of different backgrounds that have to contribute to making it happen.
Mm-hmm. What's the best part of your job?
The best part is dealing with people.
Uh-huh. And you've learned on the streets of New York how to deal with a wide variety of people, didn't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it's empathy really is a key to what I do, is to empathize and be able to understand where other people are coming from.
It also sounds like that experience with the chalk gave you not only a chance to empathize, but also to be a little bit more careful, which all of us need to learn in terms of how we're communicating and when we're communicating. And it sounds to me, and the good thing about engineering is that world never changes. It's always constant, isn't it? There's nothing new with engineering.
We've brought a lot of new things to engineering over the last 20 years. So It's always changing, always innovating. We're actually designing a lot of engineering schools now. And the key thing is the amount of innovation and change that they are driving. And hopefully to make the human condition better, and hopefully done by human beings.
Mm-hmm. What's the website address for this organization known as Ballinger?
Ballinger.com.
We've been speaking with Jonathan Friedan, Senior Principal of Ballinger, here on Executive Leaders Radio. And Mr. Zwicker, could you give us a rundown on who we've had the opportunity of hanging out with today, please?
Sure, Herb. We had a great lineup today. We started with Bob Clements, who's partner with FRS Advisors. We spoke with Tara Sipe, who's the VP of Commercial Lending with Meridian Bank. We got to learn a little bit about Richard Green, who's the Executive Chairman and owner of First Trust Bank. And we just wrapped up with Jonathan Friedan, who's senior principal with Ballinger.
Also, we were able to spotlight Matt Liebman, founding partner and CEO of Amplius Wealth Advisors. And I would like to thank my co-hosts, including Jim Wilson Newmark, Kate Duffy Wispus, Chuck Zwicker Weidenhammer, Julia Langan, Consumer 51, and Marty Wollner from Executive Leaders Radio for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today and have a nice day. Bye-bye.